You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 349. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg, back at home in Maine and South Carolina. Chris, how you feeling?
Kind of sad and depressed because it's the weather here has been so gloomy. We haven't had sun in 4 days, and so I kind of miss the Arizona sun for sure. And now the time changing, it's dark way too early, so that's no fun either. And you've probably seen my gripe about that on Twitter. I will vote for any candidate that will repeal that and leave us on daylight savings time all year round. That would be really nice.
It's funny, right when you posted yours, I was debating posting something similar but different about daylight savings time. As I Googled who invented daylight savings time. And it says the modern concept of daylight savings time is credited to George Hudson, a New England entomologist who proposed the idea in 1895. Hudson suggests moving clocks ahead 2 hours in the fall and then back 2 hours in the spring so you can spend more time outside in the summer. Well, I don't like you, George Hudson, because I don't like it being dark at 4 p.m. in the middle of December when I'm driving home from work. So not the greatest idea, but yeah, I hate when it gets dark so early. The weather here has been weird too. It's I got back. I had a red eye back Sunday night into Monday. Got into Boston. It's about, a little before 6 a.m. Eastern time. It was like 26 degrees. I'm like, okay, this is different. And then, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it was all like in the 70s and 60s. So it's been really weird. Still pretty warm here, but I think it's going to be colder this weekend. But yeah, it felt good to get out in that weather. It was pretty good weather we had out there for the most part. A little chilly some nights, but overall great weather for baseball. Not too hot. Just good in the 70s and 80s. I will take that every single time. And we're kind of going to talk about our trip to Arizona. We saw, how many games did we see, Chris? Nine, or ten? Ten, yeah.
Ten at least.
Yeah, so we got out there earlier this year than we ever have. Usually we'd gone out, I think we got out there on Wednesday the last few years. Mm-hmm. This year we got out there on Monday, caught one game Monday, two on Tuesday, two on Wednesday, one on Thursday, two Friday, and two Saturday. Does that sound right?
Yeah, because Halloween day, they all ran the games at the same time. So,
Yeah, so we couldn't get the two games that day. But, yeah, 4 days of two games and then 2 days of one game. Caught a couple batting practices in the middle of there, too. Unfortunately, no, we weren't out there for the Home Run Derby, which was so much fun the previous year, and then Fall Stars, both of those things coming up this upcoming weekend. But we should be back out for those things next year. But yeah, good week of baseball and seeing our fellow baseball writing pals and out there. Did a live pod with Chris Welsh at Surprise Stadium. Did not get a foul ball this year, but
close,
almost. Yeah, there was one that was kind of near. And then we did our first ever live pod for the Tool Shed on that Thursday night last week. That was a lot of fun. That was last episode 348. So if you missed that, go back and check that out. But yeah, we're going to recap everything we saw from Arizona, some notable players, you know, what to take away, what to ignore. I mean, there's a lot of noise with AFL. So, you know, what's good to look at, what's not so important to look at. We'll go through all of that. But before we do, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I did not mess that up. I thought I was going to say Roto Clegg. I'm at Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com. We are both pumping out a ton of content out there, you know, going through team rankings. Chris is going through team rankings, prospect rankings right now. I'm going through positional prospect dynasty rankings, you know, do AFL stuff, you know, a lot of other great stuff on both of those accounts. So both check those out. And of course, check out the great things going on over at Rotoballer. That is where our podcast is, you know, hosted. Both of us right there. It's a great site, a lot of great content. Use that code TOOLSHED, get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. They have plenty of football content, basketball, still a ton of baseball content as well. So if you're still itching for that baseball fix, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are, go check out all the baseball stuff there as well. All right, let's hop right into it here, Chris. Starting, we'll kind of go team by team, you know, talk a few notable players per team. Very hitter friendly episode here because pitching out in the Arizona Fall League by and large is not great, but we're going to start out with literally probably the only pitcher we will talk about in this episode, and that's the big one. It's Andrew Painter. So we'll start with that Glendale Desert Dogs squad. A lot of good players on there, including two that saw Major League time in 2024 with Matt McClain and Thomas Adjaze. But let's start with Painter. He's been out there. I think he's got five starts in now. We saw his start, I believe it was on, was that Wednesday we saw him that week? Yeah, Wednesday. Out in Surprise, which is the farthest one from us, but that's out in Chris Welsh's neck of the woods, about, you know, 45, 50 minutes from where we were staying in Mesa. But Chris, you know, what were your thoughts of Mr. Painter? You know, obviously very, very impressive, but what were your takeaways from that start?
Yeah, I mean, Painter stuff is back. The velocity's back. It's kind of everything that you want to see. I thought the command was pretty good. In the start we saw him, I will say that the command was a little more shaky in his start this past week. Beck was still on site watching that, but he still threw strikes and he still had another clean outing. He's been highly impressive all AFL, and that run environment's just insane. So the biggest knock I had on Painter was the amount of fly balls that he was allowing. A lot of barrels and some deep fly balls. Alejandro Ozuna nearly took him yard to dead center in the start we saw. But, I mean, he was sitting 97, touching 99. Like, the quality of fastball was there and very similar to what we had seen in the past from Andrew Painter. It's not like a standout fastball shape or anything of that nature. But when you have that velocity, like, it plays. So he's, you know, sitting upper 90s, touching triple digits. I thought the curve and the slider both looked good. He threw four changeups, I think, in the start we saw, all set around 90. So the arsenal's there. The stuff's back. I think by the time we see Painter in the spring, the command will be fully back. I'm kind of in the camp that we see 120 innings from him in the majors. Maybe he follows the Paul Skeens route, comes up late April, early May. I don't think he breaks camp with the Phillies, but yeah, I think you're still going to get plenty of starts from him in the majors, and he's going to look really good. And I think that there's a lot of value to be had. I still think you can trade for him in Dynasty. Honestly, it's going to be costly, but I still think I'm trading for him if the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you can, you know, get him for 90 cents on the dollar, and maybe you can't, and it obviously league to league, manager to manager, but yeah, definitely if anybody's going to have a Paul Skeens level impact this year, which is, you know, probably slim, as obviously Skeens had one of the best rookie seasons we've ever seen from a pitcher, but, you know, it would be Andrew Painter, and that's even with Jackson Jobe, and I love Jackson Jobe, but I don't think it talks about pure upside, pure ceiling. Andrew Painter has more upside than any other pitching prospect in baseball. So I have him now back. You know, I had Jobe as number one. I've now moved Painter back. As he's, you know, I think he's a maybe even pitch more innings. Joe, they probably pitched some more amount of innings, but yeah, Painter, just seeing him, you know, he was still shaking off the rust, but it was really impressive. Like Chris mentioned, there was some, I think he allowed like, I think it was five or six hard hit balls in those three innings. So that was, I guess, a little concerning if we're gonna nitpick the start here. But yeah, just seeing the stuff firsthand, and it might not have even been like his A stuff. And this might, that might have been like his B stuff, and it was still really freaking good. You know, he was, I think he was sitting 90, I think he averaged 97.3 or something like that in the start. I think he talked about 99.2, 99.3, something along those lines, mixed in some three different secondary offerings, curve, slider, change. I mean, he's going to be a stud. I mean, he is the ace of aces in the minor leagues right now. And, you know, we could be talking about a guy we're valuing as a top five dynasty arm. By this time next year, that he could absolutely make that leap. And I've been saying 110 for innings for him. And if he does that and pitches well, even if it's not Skeens level, if he just pitches, you know, good, I mean, he's going to obviously skyrocket further up dynasty rankings than he already is. And yeah, he is just an absolute stud and really the only pitcher worth talking about out there. But a couple more from that Glendale squad. The two guys, like, as I mentioned, that had major league experience, Matt McClain and Thomas Tajaizy. McClain's been kind of up and down overall. Tajaizy's been hitting very well out there. We got Tajaizy's hitting 410 through 17 games. And Matt McClain, where is Matt McClain on here? I'm not finding him, but he's kind of cooled off a little bit over there. But he was the most impressive one. We saw, you know, take batting practice, I think, or one of the more impressive ones, like just the sound the ball made off of his bat. It was a little bit different than anyone else out there, and he's a guy that I'm looking to buy anywhere I can in Dynasty Leagues, and we talked about him a bit on our panel with James Anderson, which was great. And then there's a lot of great things at First Pitch Arizona. If you go to their website, you can see some of the stuff in the, you know, post, you know, conference, I think a handout or whatever they want to call it, some of the slides, some of the presentations and the panels. So I recommend checking out all of those as well. Great stuff done by Baseball HQ once again. But yeah, we talked about McClain in our panel with James, but just hitters, and we're looking to, or hitters and pitchers to buy in dynasty leagues. And yeah, I think, you know, it gets a little bit lost in translation that McClain was really, really good on like a 25-25 pace in 2023. Obviously, he missed all 2024, which was a bummer, but, you know, still a good power-speed blend. And then you got Greater Mickens Ballpark. Contact skills, you know, aren't the greatest, but not terrible. Get that BABIP boost from Greater Mickens Ballpark. So, yeah, I'm looking to buy McClain wherever I can. And so Tajaizy, I think he's, you know, could be their second baseman for the Met. You know, maybe it's not opening day second baseman, but I think you could see him play that role, or maybe even third base. You know, there's been already rumors that Arenado could get shipped out, and we'll see what they're going to do there. They're moving Wilson Contreras to first base. So what's that mean for Goldschmidt? You know, there could be a lot of moving parts there for St. Louis this offseason, but you could see Tajaizy factor in a second, third, wherever. And I think he's, you know, while not the same upside as McClain, so JJ's a solid bat, guy that could be like, you know, 18, 20 home runs, 8 to 10 steals, something in that line, and maybe some guy that has multi-position eligibility, just given how much he plays all over the infield. So kind of more of a sneakier target there, but, you know, both guys, I like a decent amount here. What are your thoughts on those guys, Chris?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned McClain's batting practice. Zaire Hope probably had the worst batting practice of any of those players, which was interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, he was just like popping everything right into the net, but that's not a takeaway from the season that Hope's had and the AFL that he had. But yeah, Hope is well built, well filled out, smaller frame, but very strong, good athlete. He moves extremely well, hits the ball hard. Hope kind of checks, you know, all the boxes you're looking for in a hitter, especially a young prospect that's 19 and already has those kind of skills. You know, McClain, it was interesting seeing him out in center. I thought he looked fine out there. Maybe good for fantasy. He ends up, you know, getting second in center field. That would be quite nice for fantasy purposes. And, you know, I think the bat's going to play. McClain's going to give you some power, going to give you some speed. So it's actually interesting. His brother, Sean, has outperformed him. So that's fun to see. Probably a little brotherly competition, having them on the same team. But yeah, so JC's interesting. He's weird because he doesn't hit with batting gloves. Like, he's the only person that doesn't do that, that I've noticed. And the swing's interesting too. Like, the way he positions his hands on the bat, it just looks uncomfortable to me, but it obviously works for him. You know, we saw JC, I think he played the most of any of these guys that we saw on Glendale. I think we saw Glendale four times at least. You know, JC was just putting the bat on the ball every at bat. He was, you know, hitting balls to the opposite field. He was finding gaps. Like, he was just kind of doing everything you wanted to see. I do think JC plays every day in St. Louis this year, as obviously McLean in Cincinnati. So, you know, it's interesting that Glendale team having, you know, several major leaguers on it and by far the best pitching of any team. So, you know, they should absolutely be dominating every team out there. But, yeah, it's certainly an interesting group to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And Zaire Hope, I mean, I think there's a lot of buzzy prospects out there right now, but I think he might be the buzziest of the prospects. So, like, how high do you go with a guy like Zaire Hope, Chris? I mean, obviously, you know, tools are there. He's built like a, you know, a running back in an NFL. I mean, the frame is phenomenal. I don't know how much more he adds to it at this point. I don't think there's like a ton of projection left in that frame. But, you know, while he was, you know, kind of popping everything up in the net and batting practice, like, the raw power you saw was there. The swing, so quick and compact. I mean, this guy could be, you know, a stud offensive outfielder. So, like, right now, like, where do you think's a proper range to rank him? Do you think he's, you know, top 25 caliber yet, or are you going to wait to see a little bit more before you go that high with him?
No, I've got him top 25, and I think that's actually going to be relatively low compared to most and, you know, other people that I've heard. I mean, several other pretty reputable sources are going extremely high on him, including one that said top five, and that's a pretty big outlet. That's not public yet. It's not been published, but, you know, I think there is significant buzz regarding Hope. You know, I'm comfortable in that 25 range. He hasn't been out of single A. The pitching is really bad. All the good pitching in the AFL is on his team.
Yeah.
My concerns, like I saw, were breaking balls. Like, there was some just not picking up spin very well. He set on a couple pitches, like even hanging curveballs that he should have pounded. Hope mashes fastballs. I thought checked all the boxes there, but there was some swing and miss with breaking balls that does give me a little bit of pause. And the fact that he hasn't played above single A, and honestly, he's like facing probably like single A high quality pitching in the AFL. Yeah, I want to see a little more in 2025 before I really push him to the moon, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think top 25 range is fair with him. And yeah, I think top 10 could be realistic by midseason. Absolutely. I mean, he's got all the, you know, he's got solid contact skills, good powers, you know, runs a bit too. So, you know, all the things you really want. So it's funny. You know, I think this time last year, we were talking about, you know, several young Dodger guys, you know, Joandre Vargas, Emil Morales, et cetera, Eduardo Quintero. And I think he's kind of leapfrogged them all. And that's not to say they fell off or anything like that. Those are still very good prospects in their own right. But to Hope, you know, obviously acquired from the Cubs in the Michael Busch trade along with Jackson Ferris, just had this really good year and leapfrogged them all. And yeah, I think top 25 for him is fair right now. Moving on to the Mesa Solar Sox, which was maybe one of the more exciting lineups, going to top to bottom. A lot of guys hitting well for that Mesa Solar Sox team. We'll start with a pair of Tampa Bay Rays with Trey Morgan and Xavier Isaac, both first basemen that we saw play in the outfield. And Morgan especially would look pretty damn good out there. Made a nice diving play, almost in a second diving play. Obviously, they're still learning how to play the outfield and taking the best routes to the ball. But yeah, I think that could be, you know, you see them in corner outfield spots moving forward, especially Trey Morgan. But, you know, one of the things, you know, I look for in the AFL more so, like, I don't, you know, if they're dominating, great, but a lot of these top hitting prospects should be dominating. But I kind of look for, you know, was there a certain issue with a prospect that, you know, I want to see them correct? And that's the case with Xavier Isaac. We saw that strikeout rate really balloon in the second half of the year. It was kind of high all year, but really skyrocketed that, you know, last couple months of the minor league season. I was like, all right, can he kind of have better quality at bats out there in the AFL? And that really hasn't been the case. I mean, he's been fine. You know, he's hitting 286, three home runs, six doubles, 403 OBP, but he has 27 strikeouts in 15 games. So not exactly what I was looking for. And then, and Trey Morgan only has eight strikeouts in 17 games. He's kind of the exact opposite of Xavier Isaac, being on high contact. But, you know, where does the power wind up? He's kind of a weird first baseman, though he might be obviously outfielder now. But, you know, where he's contact first, does he hit more than like 10 to 15 home runs annually? It kind of remains to be seen. Doesn't really have that swing that's built for power. Doesn't have terrible quality of contact, but it's not really impactful either. So he's more of like a doubles guy. So Morgan's a hard one for me to rank. I think both these guys are hard to rank right now, just given the issues for Isaac. Obviously, the talent's there. We've seen it, but the issues are there. So I kind of have him more, you know, more in the back end top 50 range at this point. And Morgan, I think you can discuss him top 100, but the upside being so limited, I wouldn't go higher than 100. I wouldn't put him in like the 50 range. I think, Chris, you have him a bit lower. He's just a hard one to rank. So where are you at with these two Tampa Bay guys right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Isaac's still hurt, which is bizarre. They would have sent him out. I mean, he was still seen in the dugout wearing a wrist brace last week, which, and even this week too, which I don't know. That throws me for a loop. Like, we know that that injury happened. He was a totally different player in the regular season before and after. But the contact had already been concerning before. My question here is he really hurt, though, if he's putting up the kind of exit velocities that he is? Because Isaac has been putting up, like, pretty gaudy EVs. He did post-injury in the regular season. He's hit a ball nearly 116 in the AFL. He's had several others over 110. I think he had a couple 113s in the regular season after his injury. So, like, that's the weird thing to me. It seems like the timing is way off. Also, the outfield thing for Isaac looks weird. Like, he's not an outfielder. He looked bad out there. He's a first baseman. And Isaac's a good athlete. Like, for his frame, he's very athletic. He's slimmed up a ton since he was drafted. Trey Morgan's definitely an outfielder, though, who is a Gold Glove first baseman. That's a really talented player. But for fantasy, it's just not there at all. Like, he's probably like a 10 to 12 home run bat, in my opinion, because he just is not going to have that approach where he desires power. It's an all-fields approach. It's an approach that's going to put the bat on the ball every time. His clock times are average to slightly below. He's not going to steal a lot of bases. Like, I legit think it's like a 12 home run, 10 stolen base bat with, you know, good batting average and OBP. And how valuable is that for fantasy? I don't know, but yeah, from the outfield perspective, Morgan made a handful of really good plays in the outfield that we saw. He really only misplayed one, and if you call it a misplay, he was diving or sliding for a catch and just was a little bit short. So I don't really count that as a bad play. It was, you know, a serious attempt for him really going in on that. But at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm really curious with what's going on with Isaac, because he's been extremely bad, but yeah, the contact skills worry me a lot. So
yep.
I don't want to say I'm out on Isaac by any means, but I think there's some major question marks heading into 2025.
Now, roughly where do you have those two ranked with Morgan and Isaac?
I've got Morgan like the 125 range. I think it's fair to argue him top 100, but for a real life ranking, he'd be top 100. For fantasy, I don't know, OBP league or points league, yeah, I think you can push him well into the top 100 for points. But for like average or OBP kind of 5x5 formats, I just don't think that he's there. Isaac, I've still got like top 75, but yeah, it's been an interesting look because these players have kind of gone opposite directions over the last 6 months.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Next up, couple of Cubs guys here. With Jonathan Long and Moises Ballesteros. Long has actually been really impressed. I think one of the better hitters out there in the AFL, hitting 355, six home runs. He was always hitting the ball pretty hard in our live books, and we saw this Mesa team a lot. How many times have we seen Mesa? Like 5 times or something
at
like
least.
That, Chris?
It
was like Mesa and Glendale were the two teams we saw the most out there. And I think then this Mesa team, the most out of any team. Yeah, and Long was hitting very well. So I think he's a viable look in league. So you roster like 250 plus prospects, and then I think you can probably get for cheap or even pick up off the waiver wire right now because he doesn't really have a lot of buzz around his name. But solid bat, he had a solid year in 2024, so a decent look there. But you know, Ballesteros being the big name here, and he's been hitting well out there. 309, 5 home runs, 9 walks to just 12 strikeouts, and he was pretty good in our live looks, Chris. But just remains to be seen, like, where is he? Is he just a DH long term? Like, does he catch long term? I mean, he played a little bit of first base. I don't see that being a not out in the AFL in the minor league season. I don't see that being a viable in long term. He's not really that tall. He'd be an odd first baseman. But is he just a DH long term? Do you think he catches and stays and plays enough catcher to be eligible? I think that's the hope here, is that he just retains catcher eligibility, because the bat's pretty solid. I think this is definitely like a top 50 caliber bat in terms of for prospects, I should say. But I just don't know, how's that body look? He reminds me of, you know, take this how you want it, early career Pablo Sandoval. And if you remember, you know, Sandoval came up as a catcher in the San Francisco organization and was, you know, a pretty good hitter, you know, for the most part early in his career. So that might be a compliment, but also this question is like, what does the body do long term? Does he stay a catcher? So still some questions to be answered there with Ballesteros.
A lot, I think. I mean, his bat's really good. It's plus hit, above average power, but I think you have to be concerned about his position for sure. I mean, the catching skills are fine. Like, he's getting run on a lot. He's not throwing a lot of guys out. Like, I think I got him at like a 2 second pop time several times, which is fine. Like,
yeah,
it's not
solid.
A standout. It's fine. But Ballesteros would be the shortest first baseman in like the modern era. I mean, maybe way back in the day we had some shorter, because he's 5'7". That's my fear. He has to DH, and like, how valuable is that bat as a DH? I don't know. I think your hope for fantasy is that he catches like a couple days a week and maintains eligibility. But I'm just a little bit concerned about the position. The bat, I'm not worried about at all. Jonathan Long's going to play a corner. He's got a lot of reps at third, getting a couple reps at first base as well. It's a long swing. No pun intended, given the last name. It's a long swing, and there can be some whiff. But the power's really good with Long. Yeah, I think his end-zone contact skills are still really good. And a pretty disciplined hitter as well. So, yeah, I'm a big Jonathan Long fan. He's a top 10 prospect in the Cup system for me. And I think he's still pretty undervalued in fantasy circles. So it's my, that I'm kind of looking to take shots on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I don't think really anyone's caught on, not necessarily not caught on, but perceived value hasn't really risen on Jonathan Long. But yeah, it's definitely been a solid showing out there for him. Lastly, from this Mesa team, a couple of West Sacramento Athletics of Vegas. Real quick, did you see like the blueprint or whatever you want to call it of what the stadium might look like out there in Las Vegas?
No, I did not.
It was insane. It was like something from the future.
Oh,
it was just absolutely like Tampa Bay is trying to get a damn roof on their stadium, and Vegas is building like this. I don't even know how to describe it. It makes, you know, the Jerry Dome and whatever you want to call it in Dallas for the Cowboys look like, you know, nothing. It was just absolutely insane. Obviously, it's still many years out, but yeah, that was insane. But yeah, the West Sacramento Athletics, I guess, for the next couple of years, we got Denzel Clark and Nick Kurtz. And we had a couple FYPD guys. We won't go super deep into them. We just did with our FYPD mock with Chris Welsh a few episodes ago, so check that out. But, you know, Nick Kurtz, you know, looked every part of what we were hoping for from him. He was a kind of like a mid-season addition out there. I think he got there, I think, several days before we got out there, so it was pretty good timing, though we missed on Bryce Eldridge and a couple other guys that got pulled just before we got out there. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. But Nick Kurtz looks like a middle-of-the-order major league hitter. Like, everything, he was hit hard. He was not fooled. He controlled those at bats. You know, he wasn't getting fooled much. He waited for his pitch. He drove it. We didn't see any Kurt's home run. You know, a lot of Kurt's like home runs. Right? I think there was one, but he looks like a guy that's going to be in the middle of the order, impact bat. And Clark is one of the more athletic, you know, guys out there. I guess it fits the team well, and he's been having a pretty good year out there. He's hitting .373 with a .500 OBP and 21 runs in 15 games. Only four extra base hits, but you know, decent little power speed blend there. What were your thoughts on Clark and Kurtz?
Clark's just a really good athlete. I mean, he moves well. I thought he was incredible in center field. He had good jumps, good reads, tracked down a lot of balls, and you know, the bat's good too. His stance is interesting. He kind of arches his back very oddly. He looks uncomfortable in a kind of a squat, but there's power speed there with Denzel Clark, so I like him a lot. And Kurtz just kind of is as advertised. He's a massive frame. He's very slow. Like, he might have been the slowest runner I've seen, but he did hit a pretty big opposite field home run one cold night in Mesa, in the longest game in history that went nearly 4 hours, just due to the amount of walks that we had. But he looked really good. A lot of contact, a lot of hard hit balls. It was a lot of ground balls, which is interesting. But yeah, I think Kurtz is the real deal. He's at the top of my FYPD boards. Honestly, after Bezzana at one, I may take Kurtz too. I mean, Weatherholt and Kurtz are really close. And we talked a lot. I think we went in depth about Kurtz previously. So not a lot more to add. But yeah, he was definitely as advertised.
This is a year where I don't want the number 2 pick in FYPD. I would rather have 4 or 5, see who followed, trade down. I mean, there's not a lot of separation between 2 and 6 or so. It's really, and with Condon kind of falling, having a bad year after the draft. So it's kind of jumbled up there after Bezzana. But, maybe Suzuki's posted now. It's looking like he might be posted after, look like it'll be next year. So he would be number 1 for sure. Yep. But, definitely Kurtz looked really good. He looked the way I thought he was going to look. So, all right, moving over to the Scottsdale Scorpions. 5 hitters notable from that team. Starting with the Detroit duo of Theron Rosanzo and Josue Briseño. If the season ends today, and he might have this in the bag anyway, Briseño is probably the MVP of the Arizona Fall League, because he has been absolutely dominant out there. He looked a couple days ago. He led the league at that time, and probably still does, in hits, extra base hits, home runs, and total bases or something like that. And total bases was by, at the time, it was 54-38 was second place. So it was a considerable lead in a lot of those categories. He's hitting .392, .465, .797 with 8 home runs in 21 games. And Lorenzo's hitting well as well, .326 with 1 home run in 14 games. But Briseño's been the real big standout from that Scottsdale team. A guy that didn't have the biggest year. I think he played 40 something games this year, and he had a few home runs. But contact skills are there. I think he was above 80% contact this year. Hard hit rate was above 40%. This is a guy that has that good blend of hit and power, and he's showing it right now. He has double as many home runs in the AFL as he did all of the minor league season. Though he did miss some time, so I think Briseño might be one of the best all-around value targets of any prospect right now, because I think this is a top 100 prospect, and I don't think he's getting valued as such. So yeah, I would rush out there and try to get Briseño before people realize how dominant he's been out there and how good of a player he is.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now, with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple $1,000s in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/Ross Patterson or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/Ross Patterson.
Yeah, and Briseño, you know, he kind of checked the boxes early in 2024. I mean, he was popping off early in spring training. Really good EVs early in the year before he went down with injury. I mean, it's definitely, for me, like, you see him and you're like, okay, this guy's massive. He is a first base only profile. He is not going to catch. I think that's just kind of evident at this point. He mashes. He looks the part. I mean, there's big power there. It's easy. Kind of all fields power. Good contact skills, too, for a big man. I kind of look at him and it's kind of debating if I like him better than Xavier Isaac at this point. Like, seen Isaac a ton. And this is not like, I don't really move rankings based on AFL. But already kind of having Briseño near the top 100 prior, now seeing him kind of checking some boxes, it's like, okay, like, this guy is legit. So, yeah, I'm really in on Briseño for sure. And Lorenzo, for me, like, I thought he was good behind the plate. Maybe I just called a couple of good games when he called, but I thought Lorenzo had a very impressive transition times and throw times. The arm's really good. I got him at a 180 pop, which was elite. The fastest pop that we've got in the AFL was, I think, 174, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to look back at who posted that. I saw it posted somewhere, but I mean, Lorenzo is really good. Like, the bat will play. I thought the arm was definitely there, and well-rounded profile. He looked good from both sides of the plate. They got some film up of him from both sides of the dish, which is fun to see. Yeah, Antonio Gomez had a 175 pop, which Yankees catching prospect, that's pretty solid. So
yeah,
not bad at all there. But yeah, I'm going now saying, okay, Lorenzo looks like a catcher to me. Briseño is first baseman. I think Lorenzo is the catcher that we will see.
Yeah. Yeah. And look out Torkelson. Look out Dylan Dingler, I guess. But yeah, these two are common. Maybe not this year, but 2026, I think, is a viable time to see both Briseño and Lorenzo up with Detroit. And maybe Briseño bashes his way up by end of the year. I won't completely rule that out. But yeah, Briseño, I think, you know, huge, huge riser right now, and a huge undervalued prospect for sure. Just a huge guy. Like Chris said, he's like 6'5 or whatever. Yeah, definitely. Detroit's cooking something there, especially on the hitting side. A lot of good young hitters, some at the major league level already, some still in the minors. Obviously, Max Clark as well. You know, very good offensive core they're kind of building there. And Briseño might be the first base in the future. Maybe it's not Torque. Maybe it's Jose Briseño. So, yeah, definitely run out and get him. The three others on this team of note: Jet Williams, Drew Gilbert from the Mets, and Tomar Johnson from Pittsburgh. Chris, all three of these guys, I think the best way to describe it is I'm lukewarm on all three. You know, Jet, he gets on base. He can steal. How much power does he provide? Gilbert, we've seen the power. Saw him, he had a couple home runs out there. He's got 4-17 games so far. But he has struggled to, you know, hit for average, and he's only hitting 200 out there as well. And then, you know, Tomar Johnson, I've always been kind of lukewarm on. He just doesn't – everything hasn't always been there. He used to be, you know, thought of as one of the better hit tools in that class, especially from the prep range. But then he's kind of trying to sell it for power. Now he's just kind of not doing anything overly, you know, well, except for walking a ton. I mean, his pitch recognition is phenomenal for his age, but – still isn't, look, you know, really driving the ball a ton, you know, a little bit, but he's just been very underwhelming for me. So neither of these three are like huge targets of mine. I mean, I have, let's see, where do I have them in my rankings? Gilbert, I think, is like just outside my top 100. Jets back in top 100. And Termar, I think, is probably like the 150 range for me right now, which is probably lower than you'll see for many other rankers, but I don't know. I'm, again, just lukewarm on all three, but I don't know. Are any of these three that you're, you know, higher on or lower on than I am?
I'm low on Tamar. I've just seen him a lot and, you know, underwhelming with breaking balls. Just not super excited about Tamar. You know, Jets at least got the speed aspect going for him.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing. Drew Gilbert is, you know, I don't know. Is he a fourth outfielder? Possibly. You kind of hope that he could tap into a little more power, but he's on the smaller side. I think he's 24 or at least close to it at this point. So that's also just a little bit concerning. I don't know. I'm highest on Jet. I've got Tamar outside the top 100. Drew Gilbert like in the back end of the top 100. Jet's a top 50 guy thanks to his speed and contact, but I'm pretty bearish on his power. I just think he's a 12 home run type bat, and that concerns me a little bit.
Yep. No, I am definitely right there with you. And just so you know, we're only talking about guys that we actually saw. So like Bryce Eldridge wasn't there. He was on this team, but you know, he's really good. So you know, this is, we're not talking about guys that we did not see out there in the AFL. Next up, the surprise Saueros. You know, three hitters of note here, you know, two really big names and one that maybe should be a bigger name than he is right now. So we'll start with the two big names, Jack Haglione and Chase DeLauder. And if you go check out Chris Welsh, he's gotten video of, I think, every Jack Haglione home run. He had two in one game. And I think his four home runs in the AFL have combined for, like, I don't know, 1,800 feet. They're all like 430, 440. Just absolute massive blast. And, you know, that's Jack Haglione for you. I mean, I think he could be a 40-homer bat. I mean, that's the power we're talking about. He lifts, you know, everything you want from a power hitter. But is that a 40-homer hitter that's hitting 220? I think that's the question I think a lot of us have with Jack right now is where does he hit for average? And then Chase DeLauder, I mean, I've said it before. I'll say it again. People are probably tired of hearing me say it. When healthy, Chase DeLauder is a top 10 prospect for fantasy. No doubt in my mind, it's all there. Power, speed, contact. Everyone can hush their mouth about his damn swing. I'm tired of hearing it. It's fine. Shush. And like, he's going to be an absolute, like, you know, he's got that Christian Yelich kind of feel to him. And he's been looking really good out in Arizona. But again, we've seen him just be limited so much by injuries where it's like, can he ever stay healthy for a full year? Or is this going to be a common thing for him in his career? So two massive talents here, Chris, both with one very notable red flag. So how are you valuing that for each of these guys?
You know, I look at DeLauder, and obviously, like, he needs some new feet. Like,
yeah.
The consistent foot injuries are an issue.
I'll give him my feet if he wants. Yeah. I don't know.
I think he's a fun profile for sure, and I think we know that what he's capable of. Like, he's definitely a really solid bat. I think you could argue plus hit, power, and speed.
Yep.
But the problem is he's rarely healthy, which certainly hurts his outlook there. And with Jack, like, yeah, I think that there's issues. I mean, yeah, the power's fun. Like, he can hit the ball incredibly hard. But at the same time, yeah, I think that there's issues with his chase rate being incredibly high. I think the swing is definitely more geared for ground balls. Like, go look at, if you could pull, you can do it on the Savant feeds for the games, but if you pull up the home run locations, there are a lot of like meatballs, like hanging curve balls, etc. When he got pitched down, the games where I saw him, he hit a lot on the ground, and I think that was kind of notable. I'm kind of curious, you know, how this works out for both guys, injuries for DeLauder, and, you know, for Jack, does he chase his way to a 220 average, or does the end zone contact kind of negate that? He does make a lot of end zone contact, which helps him, but at the same time, I think there are the risk too with him. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I like both guys. I'm lower on both guys, just one, given the injuries with DeLauder, and two, the issues that I mentioned with Jack Caglione. At the end of the day, like, I think both are very talented and fun players.
Now, would you be looking to target a guy like DeLauder right now, Chris, whose value I think has dropped a little bit given all the time off? So would you look to capitalize on that personally, or are you, you know, more so avoiding right now because of those injuries?
I'm avoiding for the most part, but I actually think that if you want to buy him, now's probably the time to do so. I think that his value is probably lower than ever. So it depends on how you feel about him. But at the end of the day, like, I wouldn't fault anybody for taking a buy low opportunity because there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, obviously, I love the ladder. Everyone knows that. But, yeah, I am concerned. I'm like, God, this guy needs to stay healthy. Give us one healthy year. I mean, if one healthy year this year is going to put him in the Cleveland for a good chunk of that season, and probably would have already debuted if he didn't miss all the time last year, and he wouldn't even be prospect eligible anymore. But, yeah, just stay healthy, get new feet, whatever you got to do. is there a new feet store out there? If so, he needs to go visit it. Last guy, Alejandro Ozuna from the Texas Rangers, who looks like Bo Bichette carbon copy from behind with the hair, the blue uniform and everything, similar build to Bo. He's a little on the smaller side, but not terribly small. Good athletic frame, and everything Ozuna was doing was just positive. He made a couple of diving catches in center field, plays a good center field. He was hitting everything hard, even his outs were loud. He steal bases. This is a guy that I was absolutely too low on, and I've updated that. Like, I think this is a top 100 prospect for fantasy. And again, he's coming off a good minor league year. I think he went nearly 20-20, if I recall correctly. Yeah, he was 18 home runs, 17 steals, 292, 362, 507 slash between high A and double A, and he was even better in double A than he was in high A. Good power, again, good power speed blend, puts the bat on the ball, doesn't strike out a ton either, not a big walk rate guy, but does a lot of things well. No standout loud tools, there's no like double plus anything, but just good across the board. And when you add it all together, it's a really good ball player that we maybe could see in Texas later in 2025. Probably starts in AAA and then gets up to the major second half of the year, but I think he's a great value right now because I don't think that perceived value has risen to the point where it needs to. So, yeah, I'd be going out and trying to get Ozuna wherever I could.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Ozuna fan. He looked really good in all my looks in the regular season. Smaller guy, kind of well-built, just plays at such a high intensity. He's a guy that's going to play at 110% every play. Gets the ball hard. His EVs all year were above average, and there's good contact skills as well. Decent speed. So, yeah, I think that Ozuna is a solid prospect. I think he's a bit underrated. I think that I agree with you. I think we could see him probably in the majors at some point. Obviously, they've got a lot of guys in Texas, but yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see him up at the end of 2025. I think that that's a real possibility, just given he has performed consistently at every stop and now dominating the AFL. Like, he is certainly open eyes to the Rangers of Oregon. I think that, he's easily like a top 150 prospect for sure.
And another thing too, the attitude you see out there, he's laughing, he's having fun. He has like that good attitude out there. He's a guy you want to root for too. So yeah, I definitely, he's become one of my favorite prospects now. Alejandro, like, he was one of the more impressive guys overall, for me at least, that I saw out there. When we were out there for that week last week. All right, moving on. We got two more teams here with Peoria. The Javelinas, which might be my favorite logo, which is a pissed off looking. Is that a boar? Is Javelinas a boar?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm looking this up. This needs to be answered. Let's see. It is pig like. What is it? Pig like. New World Pigs. Okay, whatever that means. But
already,
I know they're found a lot in Central and South America, obviously the Southwest of North America as well. But yeah, it's like a really angry looking, cool looking pig boar. And now I'm thinking I'm like the German man bear pig from South Park. but yeah, really cool logo. Actually, I have a hat. A Peoria Javelinas hat somewhere. I don't know where I put it, but I don't wear hats. I'm not a hat guy. But I like the hats. I wanted some swag. So, but this Peoria team had a lot of interesting prospects on it. I mean, none of which did a whole lot. Peoria was pretty lackluster offensively in our two games we saw from them. We got them late in the week. I think on Friday, was it Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday? It was late in the week. I don't know. You left early Sunday, so it had been Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday.
But they got Leo DeVries. They got Ethan Salas. They got Luis Lara, Brock Wilkin from Milwaukee. I mean, again, nobody did a whole lot. But let's actually start with the Milwaukee guys before we get to San Diego. Luis Lara, he was actually the one that did something. He broke up the no-hitter in that Friday game, which was in the, I think, what, one out in the eighth, if I recall correctly. Thought we were going to see a no-hitter, which would have been my first one ever live, so that would have been kind of cool. But Lara said no to that. He made a couple really good diving plays in right field going towards the line. So that was really impressive. But he's small, you know, speedy, you know, puts the bat on the ball, but just how much impact does he have? Is he going to be more than a single-digit home run guy? I don't think so. I mean, even putting him at 8 to 10 right now, I think would be, you know, on the very high end of likely outcomes for Luis Lara's power. And then a guy that has power, Brock Wilkin, hasn't really done much with it. Like, he has not been the same since he took that fastball off the face just a few weeks early last year. And, yeah, the power's still there, and he's going to be in the home run derby this weekend, but really struggled for the most part in minor leagues after coming back from injury. And he's been not great, one of the, you know, highest strikeout rates out there in Arizona. So not really doing what we hoped, or at least I hoped, is being a Brock Wilkin guy. But I'm very concerned right now, Chris, that, you know, can he bounce back and get back to the guy we saw that last year at Wake Forest and, you know, after that draft in 2023? Can we see him? Is he good buy low, or is he a guy to avoid right now? Where are you kind of at on Lara and Brock Wilkin?
Yeah, I mean, Lara kind of is what he is. He's very undersized. He has a good hit tool, a little bit of speed, but there's just zero impact in the bat. So that's obviously a little bit of a concern when we look at that. I mean, he's 5'5", tops, I'd guess. I mean, he's very small. It's way less impact than like a Jet Williams type. So that obviously is a little bit concerning to me as well. I don't know. When I look at a Brock Wilkin type, I'm pretty out. Like, the body just has not progressed like you would hope. It's probably taken a step back, if anything. First steps are not great at third. There's just like a lack of, you know, bat to ball ability. When he connects, there's power, but I don't know. I was really disappointed, hoping that we would see a little bit more from Brock, but I'm lower on Brock and Luis Lara than most, I think. When I did the Brewers org, I had Brock like 12th, I think, and Luis Lara like 16, 17 range. There's just a lot of talent in that system that I'd rather take my shots on. And I think that, you know, the sell window on Brock is probably kind of gone at this point. So I don't know. I'm not overly intrigued with either guy.
Yeah, I've always been low on Lara. I just don't know. You know, again, how much power will he provide? Not a lot right now is the answer, but can we just, like, take his contact and speed, add in Wilkin's power? It'd be a pretty good prospect there, but can't do that, obviously. But, yeah, even me being, you know, a Wilkin guy, I guess I still have a little bit of hope, but it's getting kind of bleak at this point. I keep every update, I'm dropping him another 20, 30 spots. He's no longer a top 100 guy. Is he even, you know, 150, 200 guy right now? I think that's the question. But, you know, the other question is, should we buy low? I don't know. I mean, I think it really depends. Like, if the price has really fallen to the point where you can get him for dirt cheap, sure. I'd be okay taking a flyer on him and hoping he bounces back. But if you have to give up anything close to a top 100 value for prospect value for him, I definitely would not do that. He's definitely one to more so avoid right now, like, unfortunately. And then the two San Diego guys with Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas. I mean, Salas has looked good all around. He's had a pretty good showing out there in the AFL, you know, even, you know, throwing out a couple base runners, one of the, you know, maybe the best defensive catcher out there. And especially for his age is really encouraging. This is going to be a good all around player, but obviously, like, how good for fantasy? I mean, he's hitting, you know, he's kind of slumped lately, especially the week we were out there. Like, he was on fire the week before we went out there. But he's hitting 256, 366, 449, six doubles, three home runs, you know, a few steals. But also, you know, I think he's like fourth or fifth in strikeouts as well. 24 strikeouts in 20 games. And DeVries, you know, he's actually not hitting well overall out there. He didn't do anything in the two games we saw. though he did have, I think was what the hardest hit ball of his career, though it was a line out, but that was at least something. But he's only hitting 196, one home run in 15 games out there. But, you know, where are you at on these two? You know, DeVries obviously now is a guy that, you know, is pushing the top 10 overall. Salas obviously has his stock drop a lot, but he's obviously one of the more, you know, polarizing prospects, very wide range of rankings. I've been lower on him the most. So kind of where are you valuing these two, and, you know, what are you looking for from them, and what do you think we could see from them in 2025?
Well, according to Preller, maybe in the majors, that's what we might see, but I wouldn't count on it.
I hope not. I don't think either one of them should play in the major leagues next year.
No. Zero chance. But aside that point, like, I think that DeVries, you know, he didn't overly impress me at shortstop. He was fine. I think he booted one play. Beck told me he booted another one tonight. I think the bat's good. Like, he's interesting. Obviously, a lot of power upside. He's shown that. He is smaller than I thought. He's listed at 6'2". I don't think he's over 6 foot, personally. So that was obviously interesting to see. So that makes me kind of think, like, you know, okay, then, like, where are we at with him, given, like, that he's smaller? You know, you think about, like, comparing him to a Walcott, which I think happens a lot, and something that I've compared, you know, quite often, but Walcott's way bigger. I think he's a better athlete. He hits the ball harder. DeVries probably has a little more contact than Walcott. Salas, I'll actually say, I'm more in on Salas seeing him in person than I was prior. I think that Salas is good behind the plate, for one. Like, he's put up pretty good pop times. He got a good arm. For how young he is, he's advanced behind the plate. But I think that there's one glaring issue with the bat, and it's his passivity. His pitch recognition is really, really good. Like, I was impressed by how well he picked up pitches, honestly. And I think that it hurts him a little bit. I think he's gotten too passive, and he's just not getting great pitches to hit. That's kind of my perspective that I saw working deep into counts. I just think at the end of the day, like, it's going to be something where we see him kind of come around, and it's like, okay, like, I think that this could be a thing where he bounces back in 2025. Get him a little more aggressive. I've seen him put some good swings on balls. I also think he's tired. He's young. It's been a long season. So I think that ultimately he rebounds. He's probably a good buy low. Meanwhile, DeVries, rocket ship value. So I could go either way on that. But, you know, I'm not selling DeVries per se. But, you know, I think that Salas is a good buy right now.
You know, I actually do think that Salas is a good buy as well. I know, shocking coming from me, who was screaming from the rooftops to sell last year. But, you know, I think the value has dipped to a point where he might be a good buy at this point. Again, it's all about that perceived value. Perceived, as I say, PVIK, perceived value is king when it comes to, you know, trading and with prospects, or just in general in dynasty leagues, but especially with prospects. But, you know, again, even when I was yelling sell, and I never once said, and you can fact check me on this because I know I didn't, I never once said he was bad. I just thought he was overrated in terms of where he was being ranked and valued a year or so ago. But yeah, this is a good player. You know, obviously he's very advanced for his age. And like Christmas, he's tired. I mean, how many other guys, you know, his age, how many, you know, he's probably, what, over 600 at bats now this year or something like that between the minors and the AFL, and he's 18 years old. Like, most guys are still finishing up their senior year in high school, playing 35, 40 games, or, you know, whatever you play in the state that you're in. So, yeah, this has been a long year for him. And, yeah, it was pretty bad overall. And he had one of the lower, you know, OPSs among, you know, full-time guys in the minor leagues this year. But, you know, I wouldn't put too much value into that, given his age to level and just the skills that he has. Like, I think he's going to be a good player. I don't think he's going to be like a stud fantasy guy, but – yeah, I think the value, again, has dropped to the point where, you know, he could be a decent buy right now, surprisingly. All right, last team here, the Salt River Rafters. No huge names on this Salt River team, and it's probably the more underwhelming one in terms of, like, overall talent, but there have been some guys hitting well out there, and we're going to talk about a few of them here. You know, first off, Tommy Troy from Arizona. A guy that did not have a good minor league year, but also the common, thought process right now is that he just, was never 100% healthy, and he's looked really good out here in the AFL. Not like tear to cover off the ball, but he had 291, 380 OBP, a couple home runs in 19 games. So would you be looking to buy low right now on Tommy Troy, Chris?
Yeah, I think that his stock is probably tanked enough to where it's a decent buying opportunity. Troy's well built. He is on the smaller side, so that's worth noting. He's shorter, but he's kind of stocky, strong build. I thought he put up a pretty good BP session, and yeah, he looked pretty good in game as well. So I think that Troy could bounce back, and yeah, that's the kind of the perception, is that he was injured majority of the year. So I think when you look at that, it's like, yeah, I mean, certainly seems viable that he would bounce back. And I'm kind of interested in seeing how low you can buy. I mean, he's fallen in my rankings a ton, so obviously that's worth noting, but I still think he could be a decent buy right now.
Yeah, he fell in my rankings a lot. I think, I don't even know, outside top 250, I'm pretty sure, but yeah, he's definitely got, since I think the value has caved so much, given the really underwhelming slash line and overall performance, that I think he's a good, cheap investment and could return a pretty solid ROI. And these other two guys here, the last two we'll talk about today, from the New York Yankees, Caleb Durbin and Garrett Martin, two very different prospects. But Durbin leads the AFL. Again, don't read like a ton into this, because like we said, there's not a lot of good catchers out there. But he has 23 steals. Second is Luis Lara and one other guy whose name I'm forgetting right now, who are at 10. So like, he is over double. He is more than second and third place combined. Also has four doubles, four home runs, hitting 296, 416, 519. Smaller guy, but a really, he packs a punch, for his size. Don't know if he's ever a everyday major leaguer, but maybe a super utilities backup infielder type that starts, occasionally when needed due to injury or whatever. I think he could be like a sneaky, maybe he turns into, again, I'm not making a direct comp, but like a guy like a Josh Smith or something like that with Texas, that, when everyone's healthy, all right, he's not playing, as much, but he can fill in at multiple infield spots and provide him some sneaky value when he is in the lineup. I mean, Garrett Martin, good power speed blend. He had a massive home run that we saw, but, contact is a question with him. I think he hit 220 or so this year in the minors, and that's basically what he's doing out in the Arizona Fall League. So, what are your thoughts here on Durbin and Martin? Obviously, two very different profiles, but would you be looking to invest in either one of them right now?
I mean, Durbin is kind of what he is. I think you mentioned it pretty well. He's a good utility type. He plays the game, with a high level of intensity. He smaller frame, but I do think that Durbin's someone that's just always going to kind of go above and beyond. He seems really coachable from what I saw of him in BP. And so that was obviously fun to see and watch him kind of do his thing. But I do think that his role may be limited. He is Rule 5 eligible. So part of me wonders if he gets plucked, he doesn't get protected by the Yankees and ends up getting plucked. That would be kind of fun. Yeah, I have no clue if that's realistic or not, or if the Yankees even kind of plan to protect him, but we'll see. That is coming up. But yeah, I mean, Durbin's fine. Like, I'm not like overly enamored with him. I think he's a good prospect, good deep league guy. You kind of mentioned, I think that he will, find his reps in a variety of positions, have multi-position eligibility, which obviously helps. And, Garrett Martin, yeah, I mean, the power's huge. I like Martin a lot, have for a while, but I just don't know if he will make enough contact, honestly, to make the profile work. And that's kind of my concern there.
And this is another duo that if you just combined all their strengths, would be a really good prospect. But yeah, I think they're both, deep league, intriguing in deeper leagues when you roster, 250 plus prospects. But, for the most part, you have 200 or less prospects, probably not two guys. I mean, maybe back end guys there, but you definitely have their warts, but couldn't be valuable in their own way. But that's going to wrap us up. Again, a lot of intriguing names here that we talked, I don't know, 15, 18 players or so, something like that, maybe even more, maybe even 20. A lot of fun guys out in the AFL. That was a fun trip out there, and we'll be looking forward to doing it again next year. We had a lot of good upcoming episodes. You know, we're still doing the one per week for a little bit, but starting probably around the beginning of December, or maybe just, you know, whatever, you know, after Thanksgiving that week, we'll probably go back up to two episodes, get into our, you know, annual prospect and dynasty ranking series, which is always a lot of fun. Get more guests on, you know, in the coming weeks and months. So a lot of good stuff. So make sure you keep tuning in. But for Chris, I'm Eric, obviously, and we will see you again next time.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.